So today we're going to talk with Harper from Harper's Table, who owns one of my very, very favorite restaurants and for sure my favorite restaurant in Suffolk and my favorite date night spot. My husband and I used to go to Harper's Table all the time when we lived out there, and now we just travel out there to go from Virginia Beach to Suffolk to go whenever we want to. So Harper, hi.
Hello.
And then we have Najib co-hosting with us today too,
hey.
Who you guys have met.
Yep.
Najib.
Najib is my boy. We had a good time at a private dinner about a week ago.
I can also attest that Harper's Table was phenomenal. My wife is still talking about carrots.
Dude, those carrots were not right. They were so good.
She's still talking about them.
That was not on accident.
Yeah.
I know. Well, legitimately, and I think I've told you this, my favorite thing that I eat at Harper's Table is whenever there is a root vegetable involved, because I mess it up every time I cook one. And I have gone to plenty of other places who just, like, phone it in. And
yeah, well, I think one of our goals is to really make vegetables shine, which I think somewhere along the way, particularly in the restaurant space, and home cooks, I think from the 70s and 80s were bad to us on vegetable cookery,
you know.
And I think, you know, it was like you had to eat your vegetables when, you know, our goal is to make you want to eat your vegetables.
Yeah, well, it's true, though. It's true, and it's so funny because, like, in my house, we were talking about this last night.
Yeah.
My kids want the vegetables. Like, they don't care about the protein, which is asinine, but they would rather eat, like, give me, like, four helpings of broccoli, and I will eat all this broccoli, and it will be the best thing I've ever had, but, like, I'll pass on your mac and cheese. And it makes me
feel
like...
Not my mac and cheese.
They haven't had your mac and cheese.
That's right.
So probably no, not your mac and cheese. So, Harper, we wanted to talk to you about why, like, your why. Like, why Harper's Table? Why'd you do it?
That's a big one.
I know.
Mean, especially right here sitting in March of 2021. I don't know why I did that. What we're doing right now is not why. That's not true. I guess my path was, I went to James Madison University with, straight from high school. I never had a really clear vision of what I wanted to do with my life, other than I definitely always had an entrepreneurial spirit. My great-grandfather, grandfather, father are all entrepreneurs. There was never any, like, assumption or pressure or, like, not that I had to be, but that was the model, the generational model set up for me. And times were much different, you know. Back then, I think it was probably easier to be an entrepreneur before, the internet and stuff really changed the game. But it's not like restaurants are unique in that fact. Just entrepreneurship, I think, back in the day was do a pretty good job at what you do in your little town. People come back when they need your widget. And you get to make a decent life for yourself. If you didn't spend more than you made, or if you even saved a piece of what you made, you could retire, you could be comfortable, you could have that trip to Europe once in your life, you could go to Hawaii, you could raise your family, and there was a level of comfort. Not a lot of excess, I think, you know, but have a decent vehicle, have a decent home, go on vacation, you know, I think... that was kind of built into the model of the American economy. And just through efficiencies and the growth of corporations, kind of the Walmartization of America, if you will, I think, it's a tricky path. But for me, I basically, just after all those words, to get back to your question, I think it got to the point where I always knew I wanted to do it, and I got to the point... where my position working for another company, I had tremendous drive and opinions and capabilities, and I saw things that I wanted done in a different way because I really believed it. It wasn't, I've never been like that nagging employee who just could never be happy, you know, like, you know, you take a drink of water and it's too wet or whatever.
Right.
I've never been that person, you know. But it got to the point where I actually tried to buy the restaurant that I was working at. And we could not come to terms on the business end of things. And it was fairly devastating for me because I, temporarily, but I mean, I loved this place where I worked, and I really saw myself being an old man, you know, working there, owning it. But in the long run, you know, I knew that, I knew immediately that I was ready to take that leap. And when that deal became glaringly clear that it was not going to work out, I literally put in my 1 month notice the next day.
And then started Harper's Table?
And started Harper's Table.
That's crazy. Yeah. So I don't think I knew the full extent of that story. So I've known Harper for like a very long time. I did not know that part of it. That's crazy.
Did you have, through your time at JMU, like business acumen?
Zero business acumen. And I regret that. I didn't see. So my dad has always been like a quote-unquote businessman, you know, making a living kind of at a desk. Mm-hmm. And I'm not built like that, you know. I'm real fidgety. I'm real hands-on. I love to have fun. I love to celebrate life, spend a lot of time outdoors. And also, I had no idea what I was ever going to be good at and how I would ever put food on the table for my... And I had my son young. You know, I found out that I was going to have a child when I was 22. Which that was not really, you know, in the kind of invisible playbook of my life I had written, that was not a factor. But it also gave me, some intense drive that I really needed, you know. It gave me, some purpose in kind of changing from I wasn't a kid. I mean, I was 22, but I was young, you know.
I mean, I think
I don't know what I would have done with my life if that had not been the core. And it doesn't matter because that is my life. That's the reality of things. But I probably, it was definitely a blessing for me. And I really didn't know what I mean, I got 112 credits at JMU. You need 120 to graduate. And I moved home, stepped up to the plate, and, you know, got a job cooking while I looked for a real job. And here we are.
It was interesting because I did Najeeb's podcast before I did yours, like an intro to Najeeb. Mm-hmm. And I feel like something, you know, similarly in like, hey, I should probably have like a job that is in like a corporate mindset. You're like, oh, I'm going to do this for a while. And then you become what you become. Same thing happened for you. And that's cool. Because I don't think any of us know at 22 what we want to do. At 22, I was selling wedding dresses.
Yeah. At 22, I don't know. I think in some ways we're supposed to have more figured out than, you know, you have a... You're a young adult, but, you know, you're still fairly childish in your brain in a lot of ways for understanding, you know, what is important, what it takes to meet your goals. You know, I mean, for me personally, when I was young, financial goals were not my driver at all.
You just wanted to be able to, like, pay your bills and then go do fun stuff, yeah. And that's all you really think about.
Yeah, when I was kind of like, you know, fuck the man kind of attitude.
Right.
I'm not working... you know, chasing money. I'm going to do what I love. And if I could do it over, I would have balanced that a little bit better. And that's not because of like materialistic or lofty goals for my financial portfolio, but just the access that it creates for you and your family to drive decent vehicles, to go on neat trips from time to time. You know, I have a 17-year-old and a 12-year-old, and life's expensive, you know?
Well, it's interesting, too, because at the beginning of all this, you were talking about how, like, you come from, like, an entrepreneurial family. Mm-hmm. And back then, it was like, I've got this widget. I can do the fun things. Mm-hmm. We can go to Europe once and go to Hawaii. I feel like that's kind of your outlook on entrepreneurship, and I think maybe more people should think that way. Like, it's not about, like, I mean, obviously, we all want millions of dollars. That'd be great.
Yeah.
But it's about, like, what is, like, your definition of success.
I don't think I've realized how difficult it is to have millions of dollars, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, just my path, I was surrounded by a lot of people that had some level of success. My parents' friends, from, you know, lifelong friends, local friends, my friends' parents. And I guess, you know, when I was growing up, I came from a town with a bustling paper mill. Everybody had a good job. You know, one friend's dad was an electrician. One friend's dad was vice president of this. One person's dad was an engineer. You know, there was, at the time in the 80s and 90s, Franklin, which is where I grew up, and Union Camp, which then became international paper, like, really provided a robust economy for our little community, you know. So I guess I just took for granted that I was going to be okay in that department. And really, my real grasp on what $1 million is was after my first year of business. And we're five nights of dinner. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we did. We have new plans coming up. But
mm-hmm.
that's what we did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all those Friday night getting your ass kicked. Tuesday, unexpected, you know, group of 20 walks in. Being at the top, you know, I'm seeing all the money flying to employees and to the liquor store and to the food vendors and to the farmers and to the, you know, all this stuff. And we get to the end of a year and we did not do $1 million in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when something clicked in my head for how big $1 million is.
Mm-hmm.
And still, even in today's world, I mean, if you have $1 million in cash plus, you know, your house and stuff, you're not a super wealthy person.
No, which is crazy, right? Because I can remember being like a kid and being like, oh my gosh, one day, $1 million.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong for 1 second. I'm hopefully getting the point across about how much it takes to turn into $1 million.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, it's crazy to me.
So Harper, when did that click happen for you?
I mean, literally at the 1 year mark, looking over numbers, comparing it to our business plan, to our projections, to see how close to reality we were from a true year's worth of data versus a projected year's. And this is, you know, before opening, so
right.
that we were
analysis.
You were just throwing numbers into the like.
Sort of. Void. I mean, I spend a tremendous amount of time on projecting these numbers, trying mm-hmm. to make it real. You know, and I think, you know, when I did that, it was like, what's our nut? Like, what does it take just to do this?
Right.
And then what do I think the potential is? And if you don't have that, you know, glorious potential part of the plan, why the hell did you even do it?
Right.
You know, I didn't do it to break even.
Yeah.
Well, it's so interesting to me that you like talk about like that, like the cost versus like the benefit and the reward,
mm-hmm.
because so many people in what I do are always like, oh, well, this is how I made it to six figures and seven figures, and I'm going to do this. But nobody ever talks about how much it costs to get there, right?
Yeah.
So, like, you can say, you know, I want my business to make six or seven figures a year, like, on paper.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you break it down and you look at paying employees, paying for whatever, rent,
and
paying for food, paying for whatever.
It's a really interesting one because, especially in my business, that's all I know is my business.
But, right.
You know, to have these incredible people with generous spirit, hard work ethic, true hospitality, which is, you know, one of the most critical pieces of hiring for me, and they're worth more than I can ever afford to pay them. And it's the restaurant conundrum, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the need to, and hope that, like, and, you know, it is messed up for, like, whatever it is, but that the people who they wait on are the people who, like, will take care of them.
Yeah.
That's what, I mean, as somebody who worked in the...
When, and, it's, you know, a server at some, you know, whatever restaurant serving, you know, mediocre food, whatever, of course, they don't have any expectations of making glorious income. I mean, they work their ass off for it. But at some point, when you become a true professional, a true student of your industry, and you do travel and dine and see what it's like to be served at the level of like the French Laundry or Danielle, or, you know, even more kind of grandiose in France or something, like why can't great professionals in that industry, in my industry, make $100,000? Or, you know, I mean, to make $100,000, you got to go live somewhere where your cost of living goes up through the roof, and $100,000 isn't. Anyways,
right. It's not worth the same. But
no, and I could talk about that all day. But, you know, it's there are many restaurant conundrums. There always have been, and there's all sorts of new ones, you know, from the last year. But
yeah,
it's my job to figure out how to navigate all that.
But that's so, you know, I haven't like said this in the podcast yet, but we work together. And my favorite thing about working with you, and I've told you this, is that you pivot in a way that a lot of other people don't, right? And so not even necessarily like pandemic, whatever, but like in life, like I have seen you pivot in your business and make decisions that are smart for you and your business that a lot of other people get
get comfortable. Comfortable is the only way to put it, right? Like, you get comfortable in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're like, I'm cool with being right here.
I don't even know if it's comfortable. It's, we just get, we come in, we get the cup of coffee first, then you go upstairs to check this. You just get in.
You get the groove.
Yeah, you get your groove. And then to get out of that, it's more anti-uncomfortable than pro-comfortable, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But it's so interesting because you do, in my mind anyway, as like a semi-insider but also outsider looking in, you do the opposite where you're like, you know what? Like, this could have been really good, but I know how we could make it better. This is fine, but this could be better.
Yeah, my struggle is, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with this, and it's you have the vision. This is actually something kind of cool from a book I'm reading right now. You have a vision, and then you say, you see what I'm saying? And if there's four employees and you, and they're like, yeah, I see what you're saying. But all four of them have a very different version. Mm-hmm. And none of them are really lined up to what you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I'm in this process, place in my life, professionally, whatever, they are going to see what I'm saying because I'm going to write it down. We're going to have understandable, realistic, capable, or what I think we're capable of, goals at, and set them up at like 90 days, have a vision for a year, have a dream for 3 years, and then have some just like almost unrealistic, not even possible 10-year perfect world thing.
So I appreciate you saying that, and the reason is I deal with a lot of businesses who don't have that strategic plan. So what you're talking about is more strategic, right?
Yeah,
it's very concrete.
Yeah, well, in 3 months, 90 days, whatever, you know, you can say, you know, we need our sales up 10%, you know, and 10% of 3 month sales, you can put that down as a number,
mm-hmm.
and it's a goal, but it's also, you know, Misty, if you don't do your part of it, you can't be part of this team, and you don't.
Not in like a sassy way, right?
Like I certainly don't. Fear, I think, is a. It's a big motivator from within, but I don't think it's a great motivator to expel, you know, to your team.
But I think you can say, like, this 10% affords us to be able to do these things. It doesn't have to be a person.
And you also set
up
expectations, so you're not coming back, you know, with surprises. Like, hey, Misty, why didn't you do whatever? And you're like, I didn't even know I was supposed to do that.
Right.
You know? But now when we say, you know, Misty, you're in charge of soda sales, and receiving vegetables so that if we get a case of broccoli and half of it's bad, now you know what your piece of the puzzle to get. You can't go out there and find new business or whatever if you're the, you know, if your position isn't lined up for that. But stuff like that, you know what I mean? Let everybody know where they fit into the equation. Let everybody know what they're responsible for. Here comes my big, huge weakness is holding everybody accountable.
I was going to say there's a lot of accountability that comes with, like, designing things that
way. There is. And when you try to run a place like the people that work there are family.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's a dichotomy that I struggle with, right? I've got a team of 8 that report to me. And we, like you, have this really – we're in a really good groove. We work well. But I think accountability is one of the things that elevates your business to the next level.
It is, man.
Right? In a sense that, you know, if you want to get to the next revenue number, next, you know, next rung of your business, that family that you have, or how many employees now?
Well, I mean, we're in a strange place right now where we actually, we're on a pause. But you know, basically over the course of the restaurant, we've been between 12 and 16 employees, just depending on kind of what we're doing, who's doing what, you know. And that team will grow when we reopen because we're going to be doing lunch for the first time.
Yeah. And so the accountability piece of it becomes less difficult when they buy in, right, to that goal.
Absolutely.
Right.
And creating a culture where everybody's bought in mm-hmm. at the appropriate level for their position. And simultaneously, Danny Meyer calls it water the flowers, mm-hmm. and the weeds will take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you can surround yourself with folks that are really bought into the vision of the company, and they're not bought into Harper.
Mm-hmm.
They're bought into the vision of the company. Because I mean, if you came and I cooked for you, served, cleared your table, made your cocktail, you'd have a terrible experience. I would hate my life, right?
Like,
I,
right, you wouldn't be enjoying that experience.
I can't
experience.
Do it. I've never claimed to be able to do it, you know? And so it's not buying into me at all. And in some ways, I wish my name wasn't part of the business.
Yeah,
in other ways. Well, you know, Sam McGann was a big mentor of mine. We're still great friends. He said, you can call it whatever you want, but everybody there is going to call it Harper's. Yeah.
He's right, though, especially in Suffolk, right? Like, you're in downtown Suffolk.
Yeah.
You could have called it whatever you wanted to call
it. Yeah, and I really struggled with that. I didn't want to call it Harper's. And somehow this experience, I mean, we're doing it right now sitting around a table, you know, but the food is just a piece. The cocktails are a piece. The real experience is gathering with friends or family and that shared sense of community, which I think all of us will appreciate moving forward more than we ever did before, just, you know, from all the space that we all got over this whole COVID thing.
So then what makes you successful, like, in all of that? Like, it, like we're saying, like, it's not Harper.
Am I successful?
Well, I mean, if you think about success, right, success, some people think about it monetarily, right? Some people think about monetary success as in I have a nice house, I have a nice car, and I've gotten to a level of success. Other people define success as, you know, I look at my peers. My peers are not nearly where I am in the duration of time that I've spent in the, you know, sweat equity that I put into my business, right? So when she says success, how do you measure success relative to maybe Harper's Table, but maybe kind of the industry at large, right? Because the industry at large has changed quite a bit too.
Well, we're still here. And so I think that, as silly as that sounds, that is,
it's not silly.
That is,
no.
That is a real level of success in the industry. Before COVID, to have a restaurant that's been around for 9 years, it is, I think, a respectable milestone in and of itself. And we certainly didn't handle this whole COVID thing as well as I would now, knowing what I know. But, you know, all of us were just doing the best we could from where we were as it all unfolded. So I think, you know, the success for me, I mean, going back to the entrepreneur piece of the puzzle, it was important to me to be my own boss. Because I had had and still have a, you know, a vision that is unique to me that, I need and welcome a lot of other people into that vision. But just from, I guess, my experience leading up to opening my own spot, my vision was too kind of laser focused and unique to me that I was not going to be able to do that for somebody else.
Right.
You know? And really I guess success for me is creating a place to come to work for myself and for everybody who's part of it, where we don't dread walking in the door. We work Friday night, we work Saturday night, we work holidays. You know, I mean, that's kind of anybody
in hospitality. It comes with the territory.
Not just restaurants, you know, hotels and resorts and all. You know, we work when others are off. I mean, that's what we do, right?
Right.
And so if we already have to give up all our Fridays, our Saturdays, we got to miss ball games, we got to work on our birthday, we got to do all this stuff, at the very least, which it also is one of the most important things to me, is that we can create a happy and healthy place to work. And that is a daunting challenge, particularly in an industry that's been driven for so long by tremendous egos, particularly in the kitchen. You know, can I get green beans instead of asparagus? The chef says we can't do that.
But, like, why? It's not, if you've got it,
yeah,
like,
it just
why?
Happened to me this weekend, and I almost went in the kitchen to find the chef.
As an aside, Najib, speaking of enjoying your job and loving what you do, has a meeting he has to go to. We're not going to stop talking. You and I are going to keep talking.
Okay. Yeah.
But we're going to say bye to Najib.
Thanks for letting me kind of
sit in.
And
yeah, man. I look forward to it. I've enjoyed our couple meetings. So,
absolutely.
They weren't real meetings, but our
interactions.
We'll get together for sure.
Yeah, man,
we've enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna pause it. We're just gonna, like, hear you
awesome.
Leave.
Yeah,
I'm here for that. Again, this is all about organic stuff.
The organic Najib exit. All
right. Yeah, welcome. Bye, Najib. You're wonderful.
See ya.
Why does he have all his stuff?
Yes, it's super important to me. It's just a healthy, happy place to work. I mean, to the point that I've even made some extremely difficult choices for employees that I loved on a personal level, but professionally could not bring that just welcoming, positive warmth to the workplace.
That's the hardest part, I think, for me.
Like, it was so hard to me.
You get so close to people.
Yeah, and these in particular, I don't want to spend the whole time talking about this, but these, you know, a couple people in particular that I really loved and still love, but just was not a good fit to make that warm hospitality. I mean, the way I see it is the way that I want guests who walk through the door to have an experience at Harper's Table, we're gonna do everything that we can to go above and beyond their expectations for all the technical sides of coming out to eat. Things like, you know, when you want a cocktail, we feel that before you say it. We have it to you as you take your last sip on the last one to get to the next one. You know, a lot of that kind of intuitive service stuff.
You've either got it or you don't.
Then. Yeah, when there's a technical side of things, and then there's the other side, which is the, you know, getting people to take care of these guests that really want to take care of people. You know, they're not saying that stupid lady in the green shirt just asked me for, you know, Splenda and lemons to make her own lemonade, but instead, if that's what you're into,
right?
You know, we'd love to sell you a lemonade, but if you want a lemon cut up and some Splendas,
you do you.
It's yours. It's and we're happy to bring it to you. You know.
Yeah.
And so if we're gonna treat our guests with this like super high level of respect and hospitality and just, you know, make them feel really, really great for the couple hours they spend with us, then why can't we expect even more of ourselves in our interactions with the people that we work with? You know, I mean, these aren't strangers. These aren't random people coming in the door to spend a couple $100 and we'll never see them again, right? So, and that, this sounds ridiculous, but, you know, like, don't let the toilet paper run out in the employee bathroom.
That's not stupid. That is the most annoying thing as a server on a busy Friday night.
Yeah, and that's not taking care of your people.
Right.
You know? You got to take care of your... And we got to take care of each other. You know? Right. I mean, I've learned recently how important it is to take care of myself. You know, I'm in this role of dad, husband, owner, chef, boss. I have a lot of people looking up at me, you know, for whatever my responsibility is in that relationship. But I have some responsibility in all of those different areas that I've, you know, I mean, I guess I paved my own way to be here, but sometimes it's a little heavy, or a lot heavy.
It is a lot. Well, I think that's something that people don't talk about enough, right? Like they talk about like, oh, work-life balance and everything's like easy. And when you own a business, you can make your own schedule.
Yeah, and work-life balance is not just a time equation. I don't think I realize
it's
that.
It's not.
You know? It's super complex in a lot of ways. I won't get into too deep about my own personal story because I don't think anybody care anyways. But really taking care of yourself enables you to be able to take care of your role and responsibility in others.
Right.
You
know? Well, that's what... So it's funny. So I like... I'm low-key bougie, so, like, I do stuff for myself all the time, right? Like, I went and got my nails done the other day, and they're matte black because they're always matte black. But, like, there are a million other things that I needed to do on Monday. But you know what? I also had not gone in 6 months. And so I was like, this is a thing I can do. It's by my house. I can walk there. I'm going to go do this one thing for me in these 2 hours and not be home.
We deserve it. You know, I mean, I think this COVID thing taught us a lot. I think... you know, I'm 40 now, so along the way I've had friends, family members, you know, people that have died,
mm-hmm.
Young, unexpectedly. There's actually a person on my mind right now in a very similar terrible situation. We can't put everything off until we're old or retired or whatever. You know, we have to celebrate ourselves. We have to fight for our own happiness and wellness. And like, you know, doing your nails, if I went and did my nails, I wouldn't gain any happiness.
No, that's not for you. No.
But for you, like it's not just paint on your nails, right?
No.
It's more than that. For me, it's almost always outdoors, you know, whether it's on my boat or in the woods or
well, that's why I like
whatever.
I don't get my nails done because I need to feel fancy, right? I get my nails done because I can't physically hold my phone while they do it. So, like, I don't have an option but to turn things off.
Yeah, that's great.
I can't respond to text messages. I can't look at notifications. And then it's the same way with the woods, because you know I go into the woods. It's the same thing. I need to not be
absolutely
anywhere.
And I mean, you know, like, we're given these bodies that we live in, and we're given these minds that we have, and we have to take care of them, you know? I'm not talking about, like, you know, 100 push-ups a day. And,
that's not my life.
You know, like, everybody doesn't need a psychiatrist and I'm not saying that that's how you do it.
Right.
You know, but doing what like, truly makes you happy, where you're not thinking about all of the stress and responsibility. It doesn't have to cost any money, you know? Mm-hmm. It can be a city park, a state park. It could be a walk around the block. Everybody, all you entrepreneurs, if you're listening, like, walk around the block sometimes. When you're having a tough day, when you don't have time.
I do it.
Literally, if you walk around the block, it might not slam the reset button all the way down, but it will, like, just take a little pressure off of everything going on. And it's those little things. You know, 10 breaths for me is a big one. I sleep so much better than I used to because I kind of came to a realization, if I'm going to lay in my bed and worry about, you know, say it's like, you know, making sure QuickBooks is all the way up to date, you know, which is matching transactions and making sure everything's, you know, categorized where it's supposed to be. If I'm laying in bed at 3 a.m. thinking about that, then I either need to put my shoes on and get my ass to QuickBooks and go for it, or I need to have the realization that, you know what?
Nothing's going to happen.
It's
about
fine
it
for right now because I'm not going to go do it. So don't worry about it, you know? And we all worry, you know? When you're a business owner, you have to worry. If you don't worry about anything, nothing will get done. But I think transforming that into motivation and away from, like, anxiety and unhealthy thought and worry about the things. I think, you know, I'm going to work really, really hard on, like, I've always done a pretty good job of surrounding myself with great people, you know, not because I have some special power of putting them there, but because what we do is attractive to folks who love restaurant business. And they are smart, capable, motivated, amazing humans. And it would be, in some ways, disrespectful to them for me not to let them have the responsibility and, you know, to not give them a reasonable workload that that has some responsibility because
they are so capable. You don't want to like squander that. It's one of the things that you said that I really liked about like taking time for yourself, and like it sort of circles all back into like trusting the people you work with and doing all those things. So I think you know this. I have days on my calendar that are marked "don't fucking work," and that's it. It's literally, it says it in big capital letters. It says "don't fucking work."
Nice.
Like, I'm not allowed to schedule things on those days. I'm not allowed
to.
If I choose to work that day, that's on me, right? Like, if I choose to wake up and answer emails, that's on me. But I don't have meetings scheduled. And you could be like, Misty, can you meet on whatever this "don't fucking work" day is? And I'd be like, I've got plans.
Depends on how cool we're meeting about.
For sure. But on those days, my goal is to go outside and do something.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if I know that I can go ride my bike to Falls Cape and back and I could do it in 4 hours, yeah, sure, maybe I've got time to do something that night. I've done the reset thing that I needed to do that day.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And I think that we, for whatever reason, it took me a long time to learn this, or still learning it or whatever. But, like, feeling guilty about going on that bike ride because you should have been doing something else.
It's stupid.
Yeah, and in the long run, I think that you become a lot more productive when you have some time and space in there for yourself to do what you enjoy, you know? And that doesn't include grocery store. That doesn't include...
No, that's not errands.
The ball game for the kid. I mean, we love all that stuff. Don't get me wrong, and that's life. But, you know, going to the ball game isn't for you.
Right.
As just a single unit human, you know, that's as the father and as the husband and as the member of the community and as the coach. And, like, there's all sorts of good things in there, and it's very important to do that stuff. I love doing that stuff. I just don't think it should be confused with, like, refreshing me time, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense, because I had, for a very long time, I did feel bad. I would be like, all right, just like, don't tell anybody you went anywhere, don't post about it, don't whatever. And I'm like, you know, like, fuck that. Like, no, like, I need to be in a position, and it's okay to be in a position where I say, I'm going to take these 4 hours or this day, or I'm going to go live in the woods for 3 days or whatever it is. I'm going to go do this thing. And when I come back, I'm going to be better. I'm going to be better for my clients. I'm going to be better for my employees. I'm going to be way better for my family. And then, and to me, that's success. Like, success is being able to say, like, I have this machine that works when I'm not there and is better when I am. And that I can, like, have people that I trust.
That's a good way to put it. I have this machine. You're talking about your company.
Yeah. Right?
So I have this machine that works when I'm not there and works even better when I am. I like that. That's
thanks.
I think that's, it's critical, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that the two of us, we don't have 100 employees, you know, but we have a small team of great people that are more than capable of doing their work.
Right. You know? And they don't need me. No. And that's, and I think one of the things...
I think that's a... I'm sorry I just interrupt you, but I think at some point for sure in my career, you know, when I worked 80, 90 hours in a week, and I'll do that again because sometimes that's just what it takes. But I right. think for that to be an average week, you know, and don't talk to me unless you worked at least 75. There is no award for hours worked. And, you know, as business owners and particularly as a restaurant owner... I'm absolutely going to have those weeks, and that doesn't bother me. I love it.
Yeah.
But I don't want that to be the model of my life, you know?
Well, and also, in order to fuel yourself for those weeks that you are inevitably going to work 80 hours a week, you have to take that time. And yeah. so if you took...
Well, and if I'm working 80 hours in a week, I better be driving some extra freaking revenue in the door. Or
right.
am I just working 80 hours because I did a terrible job of hiring and delegating?
Right.
You know?
Right. And so, you know.
I probably did a terrible job of hiring and delegating if I got to work 80, 90 hours week after week after week.
Exactly. And I have weeks that I work that much. Like, let me, like, I do. But it's because I decided to start a podcast or because I decided to, you know,
when,
sign two employees, like, whatever. I have to train. Like, it was a choice.
When I think, you know, we've been talking about this refresh yourself. And we can't forget the balance of, you know, as entrepreneurs, I think just that simple fact shows that we enjoy work, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or we wouldn't have done that. So, you know, a piece to that refreshing piece of our life is to do things. I mean, we're driving the bus, right? I mean, it's our freaking bus. No matter how long your bus is, no matter
right.
how many people are in, no matter what seats they're in, they're on our bus, you know? And so, you know, for us to continue to do things in our professional lives that are exciting, that are, you know, maybe crashing through a glass ceiling, maybe exploring a new avenue of revenue. Maybe it is, like for me personally, I have several weddings on the calendar coming
Very
up.
Very excited for the wedding part.
And we're good at it, you know?
You are good
and
at
so
it.
So if we're doing, you know, a large wedding at, you know, say in Nag's Head is one of them that I'm doing. And we have a team in Nag's Head doing that. And then we also have the restaurant operating. That's a week where it's okay to work 100 hours.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because you know what it is. Yeah.
And I mean, let's be honest. Like, we got to make sure there's some profit in there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if I got to work an extra 20 hours because that's gonna turn into not only revenue but money in my pocket as the owner, well, then I'm motivated to do that. That is not a... I don't walk around with my head hanging low, can't believe I have to work so much this week.
No.
Like, it's exciting for me. And the more we do that kind of thing, if, you know, a year or 5 years from now, if I'm still the only one who can do some of that stuff and we've done 100 of them, well, then now we're back to I did a poor job of hiring and delegating because...
Exactly.
Like, I'm nothing special, you know? I have my ideas and my vision, and I think that's where I can... excel to something that people are willing to pay a premium price for.
Mm-hmm.
But with that vision, if I do my job well of making it clear and making everyone's responsibility in that project clear to them, then we still have, like, we end up way better than we ever would have if I overdid my input.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
I'm a firm believer that if you empower other people with your great ideas and you encourage them to do the same to you, and you do create like that machine, you keep everyone happy, right? There is that work-life balance whatever.
And I guess that's how you surround yourself with those people that you want to be around that are smart and thoughtful and capable and driven from within. I mean, you know, let's not pretend like we're not all working for money.
Right.
That is a big motivator for, you know, every professional thing that everybody does, but doing it with capable, fun people who enjoy what they're doing. You know, when I get back from doing a wedding at Nag's Head, I should have a big smile on my face.
You should. And then you should take 2 days off before you go back in so that you can, like, breathe.
Stay at Nag's Head.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you should, like, say, I did all this work, 80 hours, and it was awesome, and it was great, and I had so much fun, and now I'm going to take 2 days off to reset before I go back into this job that I love so that I can keep loving it. Like, I want to keep loving it.
Absolutely.
And don't want to punish myself into loving it.
Absolutely. And I think another one... this is kind of off topic, but something that I have found, you know, I'm like a philosopher now because the restaurant's closed and we're making plans and trying to figure out when things are right. And
I like your philosopher vibes.
Well, it's neat, but it's time for me to have some more deadlines and, people hustling and bustling and folks eating. But anyways, one thing I think as entrepreneurs that we see are shiny things out in the distance, whether it's another, person in our industry doing things, whether it is somebody else who is being very successful in their, either whether you know something about revenue or profit, or whether it's the lifestyle of that industry, career, whatever. Like for me, it might be like a, you know, a little fish shack or something at Nag's Head or something like that, you know, that I do dream of one day way down the road. I mean, that's not an immediate goal, but we can't all those people are doing the same thing we're doing, mm-hmm. right? They might be doing it really well if it looks attractive to us, if they're happy and they have a, you know, nice house and big whatever. We need to use that, I think, as motivation in our own industry, with our own company, with our own projects, for how can we shine doing what we do, because we can make what we do fun. We can polish up what we do and make it a little more shiny. You know, I think for me, I know it's certainly not the case for all business owners, and certainly not in my little neck of the woods, but I don't let anybody in the company, I guess they do whatever they want in their free time, but, you know, while they're at work, we don't talk poorly about other restaurants.
No, that shouldn't be a thing.
No, it should not be a thing. We aren't driven to be better than you or better than them. We're driven to be the best that we can be. And it's easy to have that vision to start a company. It's easy to execute that when everybody's pumped and excited and whatever. It is more difficult to toe that line through a decade of business, you know. And I'm trying to refocus a lot of the energy when we reopen to exactly that, you know, how good can we be, you know, what's the best we can be, not let's all work 3 more hours a day to achieve that, but, you know, if we're going to show up at, you know, like for the kitchen, let's just say they show up at 2 and they leave at 11, which is a, you know, not an unusual day for a chef, cook, dishwasher, anybody in the back of the house. It's not about we should come in at noon and stay till midnight, but how do we make those same hours of work even better for ourselves? You know, it's my responsibility to make sure that everybody has the tools that they need to do their job. You know, if something breaks, I fix it, you know, like all of that kind of stuff. But just a simple, like I have one employee that's not with us anymore, but I walk in the back door and I say, hey, what's up? And they wouldn't respond. And if I could do it over again, I would have gone back to the first time it happened and I would have very directly addressed that exact topic. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about because it's me who owns the company.
Just anybody.
At all.
I'm talking about just
when one person, I don't care if he's delivering the fish, if it's one of my children, If it is somebody we've never seen before, when the door opens, we just say, hey.
It's like a common courtesy.
It's free. Yeah. It doesn't take any effort. You don't have to stop what you're doing. You can keep chopping the onion and say hi, right?
Yeah.
And as silly and stupid as that is,
but it's
building
not.
On, I mean, that's the first interaction with my company that somebody is going to have on almost a daily basis.
Right.
A new linen delivery guy, a ABC inspector walks in the door, you know? I mean, we do everything by the book, but any inspection for any company is never fun, right?
No, because you're immediately, like, on high alert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when they walk in the door and you just say, what's up? Like, things could get better and better with that interaction. It might be something quick, but I think if we treat our vendors and our... It goes back to, I guess, that whole culture, which is difficult, but just a happy, healthy place to work. And for me and my company, in an industry that is notorious for having monsters that ruin everything, you know?
So I think one thing that you said that I kind of want to, that I want to, like, circle back to before we finish up is I want to talk about, you know, you're talking about being the best, right? Like, you talked about, like, we don't compare ourselves to other restaurants, like, whatever. So I have an adage. I have, like, lots of them that I generally live by. And one of them is, I will be the best version of myself today. Like, that's it. Like, I can only be the best version of myself today. And I'm not always going to make it, right? Like, I'm going to have shitty days or I'm going to be a dick to somebody. And that's fine because that's who I am as a person. But I can only be the best version of myself today.
Yeah.
That's it. I can't be the person I was 5 years ago. I can't be the person I'm going to be because it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
I can't magically have the mindset that I had on this beautiful, clear day when I it's just not who it is. So I can only be the person that I am today. And I think that's a lot of times in business, a lot of people look at it and they're like, well, I want, like you were talking about, the shiny thing. I want this shiny thing and I want a quick fix and I want it to be here now. And I don't, well, no, I can only be the best that I am today.
Absolutely.
And so if I want that shiny thing, I have to surround myself with the other people who believe that they are the best versions of themselves that day. And if we don't have a person not saying hi or whatever, you know, we don't have that negative, I'm not like an energy person, but there is a truth to like being in a room with one negative person. You know what I mean?
Oh,
if we don't have them in the room, cool.
Yeah, energy is a thing, whether you like it or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, yeah.
Mojo, you can call it whatever you want.
I know, I mean, I don't have like...
But it's real.
Not knocking it, like crystals and stuff. I'm not that person, but
If you find out it works, let me know and I'll get more.
Listen, I'm here for it. For the people that like, I'm here for it, but like... I just believe that if you are the best version of yourself.
Yeah, I definitely believe in some of that stuff. One bad apple can...
It can ruin the whole thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're that bad apple. And yeah, like acknowledging
and also,
that.
Also, I think something that that we have more control over than we realize. And I think if we... You can't handle everything in kitten gloves. Sometimes you got to be a little more aggressive and hit it head on.
Yep.
And I think a lot of times when those things start, if you just let whoever the issue is with, if you do a good job of communicating clearly to them, that's not how we roll, you know?
Yeah.
But if you also, we started it earlier, we didn't really finish, but that kind of feeding the flowers concept.
Yeah, I like
you know,
that.
If everybody's working hard, doing a good job, you know, hygiene and grooming is an expectation, not how your beard is shaped or whatever, but just that it is trimmed and,
you don't look like you haven't trimmed it in, like, you know, 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those things. When that becomes the norm and that is how the culture of the community of staff is, the folks who don't want to live like that, they never really settle in. They're not comfortable. They don't like all this, effort in chasing greatness and being the best they can be. They don't usually stick around, you know?
And I have to believe those are the people that aren't ready for it, right?
Yeah,
because we're not always ready.
And a lot of times you don't end up having to deal with them. They deal with themselves.
Right.
You know?
Right. And so, circling back to, like, how do you define success, to me... You're never successful. And so I liked that you asked, when I asked you that, am I successful? You're never, there's no, like, there shouldn't be like a benchmark. There shouldn't be like a day. This is what I can say. No,
you're successful when you were the best version of yourself that day.
Yeah, I think.
And you kept going.
Yeah, I think success for me. I mean, as a 40-year-old man, entrepreneur, in the position that I'm in, I think my vision of success is having a little more than needed in the financial department. And that's a complex issue in and of itself.
For sure.
But, you know, having all the bills paid at home and at work with extra to however much that is, but just that cushion so you don't wake up in the middle of the night. So you're not, you know, it can bleed into all other areas of your life. So as much as money is not a good pure, I guess it's not a pure motivator, you know, it's a...
No, but it has to be one, especially, you have expenses.
Yeah, well, my dad always said, real life. Money won't make you happy, but lack of it can make you unhappy.
I like that.
And it's real, you know? It's not because the money makes you happy, but if you're always chasing... Anyways, that's a whole other podcast for some other people to talk about. I would say having success is having the right people on the bus in the right seats so that they can... I get a lot of satisfaction from people reaching their potential, you know, in our company. If that is in another company or even if they go start their own company, that means a lot to me. I think having time to fuel your personal life, and that's out, like, that includes the ball games and, like, all of that kind of stuff. But, you know, for me, that involves going to fish concerts. That involves getting in the woods and on the water, hunting and fishing. And that's with, you know, it could be with my family, any version of my wife and two kids. That could be, I say any version, but, you know, like sometimes it's all of us, some of it's one of them by myself. Sometimes it's, you know, it could be any, spending time doing that stuff with my friends, and knowing that I have the right people in the right places so that when I do have the chance to do that stuff, it's not like I'm worried the whole time that things are going to fall apart because I'm not there. Like you said earlier, you know, if it's done the way it's supposed to be, all of those people are willing and capable of making decisions, of doing the best call in the situation, no matter how tiny or grand it is. And so that I can be doing something away and truly, I don't want to spend all my time away. I love to work.
No, you know, but
find that balance.
Right. Know?
If I'm going to make $5 million a year, I wouldn't care if I worked 100 however many hours a week every week, you know?
Right.
But let's face it, I own a little restaurant in downtown Summit. Ain't happening, you know?
Right. But even then to me, like if I was making $5 million a year, but I was working 100 hours a week, I could never do anything with it.
You could retire.
That's a true statement.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take that away from you. That's real life.
But, you know, just I think having all of that balance so that there's success is happiness.
It really is. And that's I think, you know.
We'll never be totally, we'll always want something more in our lives, whatever it is. I don't mean stuff. Just like.
In general.
That's, I think a great human always has future goals. You know, I mean, that's what we're, you know.
I don't believe in being content. It's a very strange way to live, but I don't want to be so content that I don't want to grow. So, like, I can be, like... Moments of content, yes.
Like sitting on the beach?
Yeah, but I don't believe in just, like, being like, all right.
All right, we're there.
Did it.
Yeah.
I retire.
And part of that, I think it's our responsibility as the leaders of these organizations that we are. If we get content, then everybody... on the whole entire list of the company, they don't get to grow to their potential either, you know? And I think the company becomes better, the people become better, the guest experience becomes better, the future becomes full of a lot more options and opportunity that we decide which direction we're going as opposed to others telling you that, you know? You know, I have a son looking at colleges right now, and, you know, we've talked about from the academic side of things, do the best you can as you walk down this, like, hallway of life or, you know, whatever your vision of that is, but you know, the more doors you get to shut for yourself and some instead of someone else kicking it shut and you don't even get a chance to look at what's behind that door.
Right.
That's the best, you know.
It really is. You know? And that's I think, you know,
we want to go fancier or we want to go more casual or we want to have another location that's casual and this one is fancy or whatever, you know what I mean?
You just want the opportunity.
Yeah, if we're making those choices, I think that is also a big piece of success, you know.
Cool. You got anything else you want to say? You don't have to.
No, I mean, just for anybody out there that owns a business right now, I think all of our humanity has been rocked. Your world has been rocked. My world has been rocked. And so I think take a step back, take a breath, be proud of your accomplishments, you know, up until this point, because there are many. Give yourself a break for things not handled perfectly. I'm really just talking to myself here.
I wasn't going to say it, you but know, I knew
give
it.
Give yourself a break for things that haven't been done perfectly, particularly over the last year when it was just such a strange experience and there was no one we could look to as a mentor.
Because nobody knew what to do.
No, they were just an older person with an opinion or somebody who owned a restaurant longer with an opinion. You know, there was no real experience in this department. And so I think, you know, hopefully things are going to keep getting better and better and better. I really feel like they are. I think there's a tremendous potential for a new way of living that is a little bit less scared of each other, a little bit less scared of, you know, public space.
I'm really excited about it.
Me too. I need it bad.
Yeah.
You know, props to all you guys because I think in a lot of industries we're a dying breed, but I think it's really important to, you know.
It's the ones that persevere that are successful. It's the ones that, like, absolutely. Look at it and are like, man, fuck a pandemic.
Yeah, and it's not easy. It's not the easiest way.
No.
I mean, we could all have jobs where we clock in at 9, clock out at 5,
mm-hmm.
make a decent living with some benefits.
Right.
And, you know, thoughtlessly go through our life. But I don't think that's who this group of, I assume probably your target for who's going to hear this is going to be a group of, you know, entrepreneurs under like 50 years old or something.
Yep.
You know, that still have
dreamers.
A lot of career left.
Yeah. Bunch of dreamers. We are.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you for coming to hang out with me.
Yeah. A lot of rambling. I hope we got some thoughtful responses out there.
It was perfect. It's exactly what I wanted. I wanted a real conversation. It's what we got.
Yeah. It was real.
Awesome.
I wish I could see my shirt.
His shirt is fantastic. There's a cat on it.
It's from Daikaya up in D.C., which is an incredible ramen joint. They have an izakaya.
I was wondering if it was a ramen place. I was really hoping it was. Man, I love ramen. If you ever want to get into ramen, Harper. It's like the opposite of Harper's Table, by the way, guys.
Not really. I have a pasta machine, and I freaking love ramen.
Shut up. Please make ramen.
There's no noodle soup in Suffolk, so who knows?
Listen.
It's like, but that's one of those shiny
things.
When
you do lunch, if you do ramen.
That's one of the shiny things that I have to, is it going to just be a lunch item? Is it a whole nother animal that we're not going to ever get to? Is it something that we could, I hate to go. I hate it with a passion.
Well, you can't, ramen to go is also like not the best.
I don't know, we're in the little Suffolk. So if we get it made and it's at your house in 5 or 10 minutes.
You could do it.
It could be damn near perfect, I think.
Oh, God.
So who knows?
Listen.
That's,
I'm here
it's
for
a shiny
all these ideas.
Thing. I, got a
I like the
ideas.
Shiny. I know.
We'll do that. We'll have a great produce stand because it's hard to get produce in Suffolk.
It is.
We'll have. I'm just kidding. Those are all the shiny things that I have to continue to deflect and realize that the four walls of Harper's Table are where my true opportunity is for right now.
Right.
And then at that, you know, that 1 year goal, 3 year goal, 10 year goal, that's where the shiny stuff goes.
I'm
and
just asking.
As we work our way down the road, what do we want to make real?
Ramen. Sometime.
Maybe. But I'm, you know, like.
Make it a special. I'll show up.
Allie's briskets and biscuits. Don't put that out there because.
I will.
Allie's my puppy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's the love of my life.
Mm.
And I think briskets and biscuits, I mean, that is two things.
I would eat that, a lot of those things.
Yeah. I could do that well.
Yeah. Harper's got all the ideas. All right, I'm turning this
That's
off.
That's the damn problem.
You're going to start giving away all your ideas. Bye, guys.